You're listening to Atheistically Speaking.
Hey, welcome to Atheistically Speaking, episode 46 with your host, Thomas Smith. Okay, so last week, as you recall, we had Ryan Bourne, fantastic guest, winner of the Sam Harris Moral Landscape Challenge, and we talked a lot, not exactly covering everything that I had wanted to cover, but that's not because it was... in any way, a bad conversation. There's so much, and he had so much knowledge that I was very happy to just let it go where it went. And so, having said that, I just want to say Ryan was absolutely brilliant, and I still have a lot of questions and thoughts about his arguments, and I can't say I'm entirely convinced, but I don't take that as any sort of criticism of Ryan, but it's more of a reflection of just how much there is to this. So the stuff I bring up here, I don't mean to imply that Ryan wouldn't have an answer for it. I'm sure he would have a lot of answers for these things, but I don't have him on this week. And, he'll be back. We're already starting to try to arrange another episode. But for now, I'm going to bring up some stuff, and I'm sure he has a great answer for it. But these are the thoughts and questions I still have. So Ryan, if you're listening, feel free to answer any of my points, either on the show when you come on or, on your blog or in an email, whatever. So for a quick outline of the arguments, I think this will really help us think about these issues more clearly. So the fundamental question seems to be whether or not Sam is right when he says the only thing that matters for morality is the well-being of conscious creatures. Now, I want to make clear right now that he's not, everyone assigns him to utilitarianism and to consequentialism, and maybe they're right, but he doesn't frame it that way. He says the only thing that can matter is the well-being of these conscious creatures, which he contrasts with the well-being of completely inanimate, just matter, just like rocks. That makes no sense. So that's the contrast he's making in the book, to my recollection. Now, it might be incomplete, but I think that when Ryan says, well, it's not just, consequences of human beings for, well-being for conscious creatures, it's also could be, rights, or it could be, deontology or whatever it is. So that's sort of the dilemma that Ryan is assigning to it, I don't know what the word for it is, but and it's probably more than just the three options too, of course, but those are the three major ones that we highlighted. So that's the choice, how Ryan was framing it, but how Sam was framing it was not, well, is it consequences or is it deontology? He was, and again, maybe he was making an end run around the topic. That's up for you guys to decide, I guess. But when I went back and I was looking at the notes to prepare, it's like, yeah, he says the only thing that can matter for morality is the well-being of conscious creatures. And in some ways, that seems completely obvious. But at the same time, I understand Ryan's objections with consequentialism. They make a certain amount of sense. And even if I ultimately were to agree with consequentialism, I think that they are worth talking about. So I don't know. That's my first point. On one hand, maybe the well-being of conscious creatures can entail, well, if justice is like a virtue, this is just an example. If justice is a virtue that's good for the well-being of conscious creatures, that would still, to my mind, qualify under Sam's view of morality. Yet when other people paint him into purely consequentialist, which I think he still is, so I'm not saying it's unfair, but I don't know. The wording is interesting there. I think that Sam ultimately is consequentialist, but he's taking, things like justice or equality. He's saying that those are good insofar as they are good for the well-being of conscious creatures, which it seems so obvious to me, yet at the same time, I understand the problems with consequentialism. So that's the first thing. So let's go with consequentialism, though, and let's follow under that. So the three problems, now I think Ryan outlined maybe two main problems, and I've come up with a third. Well, I didn't come up with it. I remembered a third that we didn't really talk about that other people talk about. So here it is. The first is things like the trolley problem and the inhospitable hospital. Those sorts of problems, they seem to me, in thinking about what they do, what do these things do? They're little thought experiments, and they're designed to get us to prefer or want to choose two different solutions to this essentially the same moral problem, it's a little different, but the consequences appear to be identical. So this is designed to say that if the consequences of these problems are identical, and we happen to prefer one action in one case and another action in the other case, well, then clearly there's something more than consequentialism going on. There must be something else we need in order to make this decision. So that's essentially it. And I'll come back to these. I'm just going to outline them. The second objection, to my mind, seems to be difficulties with summing or aggregating well-being. For example, you know, what's better, 500 people who are just absolutely elated or 5 million people who are all kind of, you know, that sort of thing, which is definitely an interesting problem. And number three, we didn't really discuss this, but there are people in the comments and it makes sense to want to challenge this. Certain people challenge that well-being can't really be defined in a coherent enough way or quantified in any useful way. As listener Alexi wrote, and I'll come back to Alexi, who was also on the bonus content. Side note, you missed a great bonus content last week if you are not a Patreon. It was a really cool discussion. I'm loving those. So you're really missing out. Don't do it for me. Do it for you. They're really good discussions. An entire separate bonus podcast. So make sure to go on patreon.com/atheist. Okay, enough of that. Alexi wrote, and I'm probably going to have him on again this week for some more discussion. What about multidimensional measurements of well-being? Let's say we measure well-being by absence of pain, positive sensations, intellectual fulfillment, social fulfillment. How do you compare, 10 positive sensations plus 100, you know, intellectual fulfillment plus 5? Like, how do you compare any of that? That was a comment he wrote on the site. Good comment. Yeah, that is a tough problem. It is tough. So that's another, I'm not trying to answer these right now. I started thinking about how I'd answer, but I just wanted to outline those. So those are the three main objections that I want to try to cover today if I have time. We'll see. I want to give some analysis of these. I'm really looking forward to, with you guys, sort of continuing this discussion, and also maybe with Ryan, depending on if he wants to come back and do that. And honestly, I haven't read that much about this besides Sam Harris and Ryan gave me a great education. So I'm just liking learning this. And I want to say that if you have comments and if you have references, I'll certainly read whatever, you know, if you can reference a, you know, something on Phil Papers or whatever, that would be really helpful because I'm looking forward to kind of just learning through this and going through this with you guys. So objection one, trolleys and hospitals. My thinking with this, I have a few thoughts. I said it at the time. I think using our moral intuitions in order to reason to a theory of morality is fundamentally flawed. In the old days, who knows when, I don't know, in Kant or Hume, even though I don't even know if either of them were consequentialists, but that they probably were. Actually, it doesn't matter because we're just talking about reasoning from moral intuition. In the old days, it probably made a lot of sense for philosophers if they were religious or even if not necessarily religious outwardly, if they viewed humans as these sort of special divine creatures, which of course we're definitely special on this planet. But if you view humans as something more than natural, you know, as having some divine component or either created or in some way just better than, you know, in some way, divine, I guess. It sort of makes sense to start with our intuitions, which I think religious people think, oh, God gave us these intuitions. I need to listen to my moral compass it will tell me the right answers. It sort of makes sense if that's your point of view to say, okay, well, let's think these through. Let's find what our intuitions are in different situations and let's reason to morality from there. But nowadays we know that we're not special really. I mean, we're special, but we're not supernatural in any way. And we know that our intuitions can be terribly wrong frequently. And so in my mind, we should absolutely expect contradictions to arise if we're just using these imperfect sort of feelings or, you know, intuitions, moral intuitions to reason to a complete theory of morality. Sort of like an analogy is sort of like if you started a Sudoku puzzle by just filling in like three or four random numbers, it would be incredibly fortunate to end up with this completely consistent solution that worked out, all the numbers lined up just right for a complex puzzle. It's not surprising to me that given a lot of philosophers thinking about these things over the years, that there would be interesting little problems you could run into. Now, Ryan wants to say, and he did say, that we need to make sure these theories, his response is that they have to make sense on a conceptual level. They have to have logical consistency on a conceptual level. And I agree with that. But my response at the time was, if any of these systems that we are choosing from were perfectly logically consistent in all situations, I don't think there would be much of a debate anymore. And so when I look at consequentialism, I guess you could say I'm sort of biased toward it because it just seems such a no-brainer to me. And the other part of it is it seems like rights-based or duty-based ethics, while, you know, there are, I think, good components to it and things that are interesting, it feels so religious to me that maybe I'm biased against it because it really feels like it has some of the effects of religion built into it, like this assumption that there's a right way to live your life and there might be certain right ways to live your life, but not in that way. I don't believe that, you know, the best thing for everyone is to seek eudaimonia, where, you know, I think that the world is too complicated and crappy for that to be our main system of morality. So anyway, so he had a response. What he said was, he said it need to be consistent conceptually, and I understand that. So we're gonna have to do what we can. I would argue that consequentialism to me seems to be the most consistent, but we'll see. Maybe I'm wrong on that. And he also said that. And let me note here, Ryan is a great teacher. And he would go through tons of counter arguments for everything, essentially, and which is great. I love hearing all of them. But I just want to say that I'm not assuming necessarily that whatever counter argument Ryan brought up is like his argument, you know, like the one he subscribes to. I think that I don't know really what I'm just going to talk about his arguments as though, you know, whatever, they're the arguments. I don't mean to suggest that this is necessarily his position. I'm not entirely sure what his exact positions would be on this. It might be that he ends up being a consequentialist. I don't know. If you have a different recollection of it, let me know. But it seems like he was pretty well trying to outline all the problems. But I think he does probably... I'm guessing, I don't know, and it doesn't matter, but if I'm just taking a guess, it does seem that he thinks consequentialism needs to be tethered by some rights or some limits, like he said. But anyway, his response to this was that first, two things. First, our intuitions, he said, our intuitions do screw us in terms of probability. They can be wrong, he says. But he seemed to say that while they're wrong on some of those things, they're not necessarily wrong when it comes to morality. Maybe it needs to be proven that they're wrong or something. I'm not entirely confident of the argument, but he seemed to grant that yes, they can be wrong, but not necessarily when it comes to morality. Hopefully I've represented that correctly. The second thing he said, which I think is more important, is if the answer to the trolley problem is that we need to change our moral intuitions, then he says, how could we say that that's better than if we changed our psychology to go along with virtue ethics more consistently? So once we're, if we're throwing out intuitions, he said, essentially, if we're saying those could be wrong, how do we know, well, are they wrong for consequentialism and we need to change that? Or, you know, maybe some other system that's been proven wrong based on these intuitions would actually be right if you assume the intuitions could be wrong. So that's an interesting problem. My guess was, and I think this is probably still my view, I think the virtue ethics theory is such a fundamentally wrong theory of morality. I mean, it just psychologically, it doesn't seem consistent with us at all. There would be far more that you'd have to change to make us consistent with virtue ethics than to just say, well, our moral intuitions are wrong when it comes to a few things. And the, so let me see here. But I think I can answer both these objections somewhat with an example that I think I read in Peter Singer, but I think it's pretty, pretty popular and it's also pretty easily demonstrated. But I think it's well known that if you show someone a picture of one starving child, then they're pretty likely to donate money. And if you tell them that a million children are starving somewhere, they actually give far less, even though it should be, well, there's more of a problem. So I should give more, but no, we give less. Now, this is a moral question. How much money ought I to give to a particular charity? And I think you and I are completely comfortable. I'm going to put words in your mouth right now. I think we're completely comfortable in saying, well, our intuition to give less when more people are starving is just completely backwards. It's pretty easy for me to say that. Now, how is this all that different from the trolley problem? Because to me, it's pretty obvious that saving five people at the expense of one is the right answer. And but it's just like when we frame it in a different way, which I think would be analogous to showing a picture versus, you know, saying a number or something, then all of a sudden it changes. So there's something going on there. The one thing I think we can quite easily recognize is just a flaw in our moral intuitions. And now that I've established, I believe that that example pretty well establishes that we can be totally flawed in our moral reasoning. So we need to use something else other than just our intuitions. I don't believe we can just reason by way of the, you know, how do you feel about this situation? Well, that doesn't feel good. Okay, well, then that's wrong. I don't think we can do that. With the trolley problem, here's the other thing. Now, I have a second answer to the trolley problem, which it makes me a little, I'll be totally honest. You guys know me. I'm pretty open, pretty honest, and I try to be fair. I don't feel great about having another answer to this problem. Doesn't it seem weird sometimes that, like, I don't feel like I feel like if either of my answers are correct, I shouldn't need the other, you know? So I feel a little weird about having another answer. Feels like maybe, like, I'm worried maybe I'm just biased toward wanting the trolley problem to not, you know, that to not be a good objection. So that makes me a little nervous, full disclosure. But I don't know. I think the same thing goes for the criticisms against consequentialism. They seem to be multiple. And if one doesn't work, then here's another one and that sort of thing. So I don't know. I'm not sure what that means. I just thought I'd mention it. But anyway, second answer to the trolley problem, and I think this is what Sam Harris says, and maybe we mentioned it last week. The consequences might just be different. I mean, they really might not be identical because there's the idea that you have to, like, murder somebody actively. And it gets a little weird to get so particular about thought experiments. And Ryan, I think, will say, well, you know, you can't, it's tough to tear the entire thing down and nitpick every little thing. But at the same time, if you're relying on, like, oh, what's your feeling when you give your answer? What is your intuition of what the answer should be? I don't know. I think it's fair to pick things apart, because when you say, oh, you're pushing a fat man, he's going to stop the train. Well, that doesn't make any sense. I mean, how often have you ever thought, oh, I need to stop this trolley by pushing a fat person? I still think the physics can't work out. I mean, he said physics says, you know, that it's okay. I still think if you can move a guy somehow, that if you have the ability to move him and he has the ability to stop a train, I believe you have the ability to stop a train. I mean, unless you're saying somehow you just trip him, like you can't move him, but maybe just like leg sweep him and he falls And then he like, but then you get into all this mess. And I just don't believe that our intuitions are very accurate. Once you have that, you have the idea of there's some uncertainty there. Yeah. Now you say, oh, it's going to work. Oh, and he also said, well, we could just as easily say the lever isn't going to work in the train, but we don't say that. And my answer to that, I didn't mean that to sound sarcastic. That's the answer he gave. And it was an interesting point. But when I thought about it, I thought, well, if the lever doesn't work, then all you've done is nothing. You know, you haven't done anything. The train was going toward the person, and now it's, you know, it's going to hit the five people. Five people. You couldn't do anything. If you throw a person on the tracks and it doesn't work, if there's any doubt in your mind, it doesn't work. You just murdered someone for nothing. So I think it very much does matter. And there is a difference. There are different problems. And so I think it's sort of a trick to me. I mean, I think if you were shown pictures of all the people, or the five people who were going to die for the expense of this, if you're really trying to control it all and say, yes, this fat person will stop the train, I think all our hesitance, I really think, is a result of the uncertainty and the feeling that, okay, if I were trying to give an armchair sort of amateur evolutionary explanation, it seems as though our intuitions, our moral feelings about actively killing someone would be far stronger than the idea that a train is going to kill either one person or five people, and there's nothing we can do about it, except that we can choose which it's going to kill. I mean, It seems so obvious to me that just would feel a little easier than you're actively going to kill a person because of this small chance that you're wrong and that you're making a decision for someone else. Now, maybe that's where a philosopher would say, well, then you're not just taking into account the consequences. You're taking more things like they have a right to make that choice themselves or something like that. And I think that it's still within consequentialism because you don't want to live in a world where people can just willy-nilly make these decisions that are going to, you know, with uncertainty of any kind where you're going to murder someone. Now, I still say if all the everything in the example in the trolley problem, if that's all, if we're just taking that totally 100% it's going to work or whatever, I still say, okay, I'll push the guy. I mean, that's just how it is. I mean, he's one guy and there's five people. I can save five people's families will be really happy. Now, if you told me the five people were all criminals and, you know, the one guy was like a saint, you know, I probably wouldn't do it. So, I mean, it really matters. And that's not a change in anyone's rights, you know, unless you want to say criminals have less rights. But if they're not, you know, they're not actually criminals. They're just horrible people with families who don't like them. But they're not criminal. I mean, all these things change what I would want to do, and they're all because it would have different consequences. So I don't know. That's sort of my second answer for that. I think the uncertainty really gets us when we're just reasoning by intuition. And I don't think it's a good way to reason, because if we reason by intuition with the charity thing, we would have to conclude, oh, okay, well, it's better to give less to charity when there's more people and, you know, when there's a certain number of people in trouble. And that's just wrong. I mean, we know that's wrong. So I guess I'm curious if anyone can identify why there's a difference there and why we know that moral intuition is just a bad intuition. I've put some thought into it, but I just thought of this today. So I don't have a great answer for why it's so obviously different. So that's something to think about. Let's see. Why is it so different? Because it just seems like simple math, I guess. I mean, it just seems like mathematically one person's bad. So if two people's worse and then three, you know, and then a million people should be a million times worse. So I don't know. I'm not sure that would be my guess. That just seems so mathematical. So that's where I stand with the first sort of objections of trolley problems and thought experiments that lead us to two different conclusions based on, you know, what are quote unquote the same consequences. So the second objection seems to be the difficulties with summing or aggregating well-being. You know, the numbers, as we talked a lot about this. It would be better to have 10,000 people or, you know, tons of people, because if you're just going for the aggregate of well-being, the most well-being, then, you know, 100 billion people who are miserable might be better than, you know, such and such. And if you go with an average, then there was some other objection. I think the average objection was, well, then why not just one really happy person, which I think is impossible and ridiculous. And you shouldn't be allowed to just stipulate things that are impossible. But, unfortunately, philosophers apparently disagree with that. Which I think comes from a lack of understanding of evolution, because we could not be happy with just one of us. We would be miserable. But that's my objection to that. But anyway, this thing, it took me a while to think about this. It does seem tough, because very simply, I mean, it does seem impossible to add up everyone's happiness. I mean, there's no way we're doing any real math. There's no math involved in any of this. So for a philosophy that says, you know, the most good for the most people, essentially, even though that's not really how Sam Harris would phrase it, it does seem curious that there's not a single time that I could even imagine that we'd be able to make a real calculation. So that does seem to be a problem. But when he's bringing up all these, you know, should we let a meteor hit the world, or should we shoot for only 10,000 people or whatever, why aren't these problems with any other theory of morality? I think they totally are. I mean, what's better, 500 people who are very just, or a million people who are kind of just? I mean, is there some obvious answer to that I don't know? I mean, I guess, would he say that, oh, just each individual person, you know, it matters like how just they are? Well, then I'll do the same thing. Like, okay, why not one person who's perfectly just? That would be the best state of affairs. These seem to be this isn't unique to consequentialism, right? If your idea is, you know, if it's duty based, okay, what's better, a zillion people who are not barely doing their duties, or what? Like, these just aren't solvable problems, because morality isn't like a quantity, I don't think. I mean, it's what, when I was thinking about this, I thought, yeah, I just don't think this is a valid objection over any other objection of any other moral theory. And the reason is because it's just totally divorced from reality. I don't think we can I think morality has to do with making decisions. And yes, we can. I'm fine if we want to talk hypotheticals and say, oh, hypothetically, which decision would be good. And he tried to paint a picture of a meteor and all that that would take out part of the world. And my answer to that is like, well, what about the terrible consequences for all the people who are incinerated to death and all that? Like, I mean, I don't think we can. That seems unrealistic to me, that just because we'd conclude that, oh, we'd be all better off if there were, you know, a million fewer people, that somehow means it's okay to just kill a million people. I mean, that would be a terrible world. And there would be undeniable suffering going on with those people. And it just seems like this is a problem with any moral system. We're just not, we can't add it up. It's just not going to work like that. I think that we need to talk about making moral decisions with, you know, maybe not common, but at least realistic moral dilemmas. That seems to be the real test to me, and what we need to think about when we make those decisions. So I don't know. I'm just not that convinced by coming up with this insane hypothetical where we're going to let, you know, a meteor kill a bunch of people. Well, since when is killing a bunch of people not a negative consequence? And I sort of sympathize with Sam when he's kind of laughing at some of these things. I was a little thrown by it. I mean, I guess, do I need to consider that as a possibility? I just don't think so. I mean, in what world would it be right to allow a bunch of people to die because we've determined that we think there will be more well-being? I just don't think that's how it works. If we determine there will be more well-being with 10,000 people than with billions, then it's okay to kill a bunch of people. And I don't know how well-being scans through time. And this could be a problem with, well, it could be a problem with Sam Harris's theory, maybe. I mean, what's how do you quantify if we're going to kill a million people, like in this meteor example, but then 10,000 people are going to be happy for X number of years? Like, well, okay, if they're just going to be happy for 1 year, it doesn't seem worth it. What if the rest of civilization will be happy for the rest of time? Is it then worth it? Somehow it guarantees well-being for the rest of time. Is it then worth it? And it's like, well, maybe. I don't know. I mean, a million people is a lot of people. And so then I guess I can, maybe I'm talking myself out of my own argument, because I could see wanting to say, well, you do need a check. You need a check and balance of just, you can't just kill people because you think things might be better. You know, I mean, there's just no, but to me, it's just so unrealistic that I think that it just doesn't seem that compelling. And again, Ryan would say, well, it needs to be totally logically consistent and all that. And again, I would have to say that I don't think any of these are completely logically consistent. And I think the same would go with rights or with duty based. I mean, how would you answer these insane hypotheticals with duties? I mean, you can't quantify how much good there is in like virtue. I mean, you can't add up different virtues and like, oh, is one virtue of justice worth how many virtues of equality or some other? I mean, it just doesn't work. That's just not how, let me go and say, ahead and say right now, that's not how morality works. But what I want to say is that I think, despite the fact that it may be an impossible calculation, I think that's still the calculation we want to do. And it's still what we wish we could do. And so therefore, to my mind, it's still a valid way to try to think about these problems. I think that the rights way, I mean, the idea, and that was what was deontology and virtue ethics. I mean, deontology, I guess, is more duty-based, but when we seem to talk about justice and rights, that seemed to fall under deontology, right? Or was that virtue ethics? I don't remember, but one of them, whatever. It does seem useful to say that people have certain rights, and they're a way of, they're almost, to me, though, they're sort of a way of just estimating the answer. I believe Sam Harris has brought up before, and I think it was probably about morality. He said, and I apologies for always quoting Sam Harris. I need to read some other people and quote them. I admit that. But his is the book I'm most familiar with these moral issues. So, but there's a problem. Okay, how many birds were flying over the oceans, were in flight when JFK was killed? It has an answer. There is some number that is the right answer, and we'll never know what it is. We may somehow someday be able to guess, you know, some amount of accuracy. If we did a ton of research somehow, maybe we can determine via, you know, biology or something roughly how many existed at that time. I mean, we can make educated-ish guesses, but we'll never know. So for me, when I'm thinking about these problems, I think consequentialism is the equivalent of saying, well, we're trying to count how many birds there are. Like, that's what we want to know. We want to know how many birds there are. And then these other ethical systems are like, but you can't count how many birds there are. There's no way to do it. And in a way, they're right. So it's interesting. But in another way, it's like, well, so rights, to my mind, if we're sticking with this analogy, which I'm not sure is a perfect analogy, but I'm working with it. So let's see if you guys think it's a good analogy. Rights, in my mind, in this analogy, are like, well, okay, we know it's not 1,000 birds. Like, that's like a right, analogous to a right. And it's like, yeah, well, okay, we do know it's not 1,000 birds. But it's, you know, that doesn't tell us the answer per se. They're sort of borders, you know, they're sort of safeguards against terrible answers. You know, we know it's probably not, you know, 10,000 is probably more than 10,000, but it still feels like we are ultimately, we want to know the answer to that problem. It may be impossible, but that is what we're trying. Undeniably, these rights and these duties and these, whatever it is, it's all trying to get at the best answer for that problem. That's what I think. And so I think it's still a fair way of phrasing the problem, even if it might be that for our well-being, it may be better to have a right which says, you know, what would be a good right? I don't know. Like Sam Harris said, they're good insofar as they help with the well-being of conscious creatures. Because like you said, and like I said at the time, there's nothing that seems to be a negative right. It always seems to be positive. Always seems to be things that are good for us, that are good for our well-being. Why is that? No one would say, well, here's a rule. It's negative 50 birds. No one says, it's like, that's ridiculous. Well, how do you know? Because it's just not, that's not it. There's, you know, we can determine that, we can guess, and it's nowhere near our guess. Well, then you're just using your guess, right? You're using like, okay, what's my best guess of how many birds there were flying over the, you know? So it all seemed to me, it all seems to fall back on that. That's what we want to know. We want to know what's going to be best. In a simple word, what will be best? That's so simple that, so, you know, the objection, well, when you're looking at well-being, you know, I can reason you into this weird experiment where you might want the wrong thing. So therefore you need a rule that says, you know, you shouldn't treat people as, you know, means to an end or something. And it's like, well, that comes with a ton of problems, because what if you want, and that's, I think that's Kant, right? You can't treat people as means, only ends. And that's a great, by the way, well written. I love that phrasing. I've always liked it. I heard that in college, that's the guide to morality, or one of his three, I think, is you can't treat people as means, only as ends. And that's great. That's really well written. And I think that it applies most of the time. We probably don't apply that in our everyday lives very well. I think we, I think we're very selfish, and we tend to treat everybody as means and rarely as ends. But what happens when, you know, the trolley problem that comes along? What, there's one person and you need to treat him as a means in order to save a billion people. What do you do? Well, that fails. You know, duty-based ethics fails in that situation. So it's what annoys me is that every time I asked Ryan, so it's not just well, but he would say, oh, we're just trying to say it's not only consequences. There must be something else. So that was repeated at least, I think it was like three times. I said, well, so what else is it? What is the other thing that goes into this decision if it's not well-being? Well, it's not just well-being. It's not just consequences. It's, you know, and that he would say, like, if it's consequentialism would say the only thing that matters is consequences. But we've proven that there's something else. Well, what is the other thing? Justice? Well, why is justice good? Because it's good for people. You know, it has good consequences. It's really weird to me to argue that justice is good somehow outside of its effect on people. I don't get that. If there's a good argument you can think of that along those lines, let me know. But I'm kind of unconvinced that there is anything else going on. I think they are these rules that these trolley problems may or may not, you know, even necessitate. I'm not even convinced they necessitate them. But if they do, if it necessitates a rule like that, well, what happens when you need to break that rule? Because you do need to. Okay, what if you need to cheat someone out of something to save a bill? You just make the stakes super high, and eventually everything fails. You know, to save everyone in the world, I need to cheat someone at poker. I don't know, you know, something unjust. You know, it's like, well, okay, I'll do it because the consequences are too great. Well, what happened to that other thing that's not consequences? Well, it got overridden by consequences. So I don't get how there's anything else there, but that you think it would be good for people to have a safeguard in place to consequentialism. That's my view of it. And I think, I regret to have to say that I think that's what Sam Harris concludes as well. But I will say to Ryan, like, there are problems. I'm not totally convinced about Sam Harris's moral landscape anymore. I think that there's too much philosophy to do for there to be that much science, but it's interesting. I also think that we're not arguing exactly on Sam Harris's terms. I think when Ryan is doing things like saying, you know, he's just a consequentialist, so we need to disprove consequentialism, and then we've disproven his thesis. But if he's defining things in his terms and saying broadly, it's the well-being of conscious creatures inhabit a material universe, and theoretically, we one day could determine everything that goes into our happiness and our brains and why we feel what we feel. We can determine all of that through science. Therefore, morality must reduce to science, even if not in practice, even if only in principle. And it's kind of hard to argue with it on those terms. So I don't know. And so Ryan can help me out with this. I don't know how to argue with that on those terms, other than to say, well, it's just practically impossible. And you need a lot of philosophy, which is essentially like a shortcut, but a good shortcut. Like you're kind of shortcutting in a way because you don't have the answer. You don't know how many birds there were. So you need to shortcut into saying it was at least a certain amount, or it's no more than a zillion. You know, it's like, which is a fake number. So that'd be a pretty safe assumption. But I don't know. So there are problems with it, I think. But I still think that consequentialism, to my mind, I think that's all that matters. I'm not convinced that these other systems, but like Ryan said, I mean, I guess Sam Harris can't sidestep that. And he did sidestep it a little. Maybe he should have addressed it and said, this is why I believe, which he did later in responses to people, in response to Ryan as well, which I'm sure you all read that. So that would be my criticism. I think he needed to address that criticism first and justify his step into consequentialism before saying that science can determine all that. Because it feels like science could determine consequences far better than it could ever determine rights. You know, like how do you scientifically quantify justice? That's never going to happen. So it does seem like science is a little more biased toward consequentialism. But then again, like I think we're almost using different language, because he's just saying well-being of conscious creatures is all that it is. And well-being, you know, scientifically in the brain, if you're a materialist, it's easy to see that theoretically, it all has to do with scientific facts about the brain. So I don't know. Those are my thoughts. I do have problems with the objections. Oh, I didn't even get to the third objection. How am I doing for time? Okay, I got time. The third objection. How can you quantify sensations, fulfillment, social fulfillment, all that? How do you compare these units? This is where I actually kind of thought I would go if I would have like written into Sam Harris's essay contest. I think it's tough to, I mentioned in the podcast also like engineering people to not even need anybody or whatever. Like, how would you make those decisions? Which I think is interesting, but I also don't know how you would quantify and line up different levels of morality. And I think Sam Harris's response to this would be that they correspond to different peaks and valleys on this moral landscape. So it may be that if you have 10 positive sensations and 5 social fulfillment, that's one point on the landscape, but 15 positive sensations and 2 social fulfillment, you know, is a different point. And, you know, maybe and he did say there may be strange points. There may be points we can't say whether one's better or worse because they're equal height on the landscape. I think that would be his answer, but this is a troubling one. And I'm surprised that Ryan did sort of, and I mean, maybe it's just for time's sake. I don't want to put words in his mouth, but he did sort of seem to let the well-being part go. It's like, okay, yes, well-being could be defined in such a way theoretically that, you know, it's fulfillment. It's not just happiness. It's not just like pleasure. It's like this fulfillment. It's that sort of thing. And he didn't argue that much. And I wonder why that is. Maybe he just felt like he didn't need to. Maybe he doesn't. Maybe there's some answer to this quandary that I don't know about. So, Alexi, good objection. I've meant to talk about that. I don't know. How do you say which is better? Well, you know, this guy here will get a certain amount of, positive feeling versus this person over here will get a certain amount of, what is it? I don't know, some other part of accomplishment or something. Like, it's, you can't do this math. But I don't think, like I said, I don't think you can do the math with any of them. You just have to form your best, do your best given a certain decision. I still think you're doing your best to determine these moral outcomes based on how good they will be for the people involved. And maybe we are biased toward ourselves. Like we want us to wind up. I mean, I think most people are somewhat fair, but you know, all being equal, they're going to want them to get the benefit versus other people. And that may be just something we can't control. Or maybe there are really selfless people throughout history and they are celebrated usually. And that's our way of trying to encourage it. But, I don't know. I think that any sort of quantification, I mean, there's no moral theory in which quantifying it works, is there? I mean, how do you compare one, like I said before, one justice versus two, you know, two equal rights versus three eudaimonia, like all these different terms. I mean, none of them make any sense when you quantify them. So I don't think that's a unique challenge. And like I said, I don't like that all the reasons for other systems are because you found inconsistencies in consequentialism. That's a weird way for other systems to exist. And I don't find it terribly compelling. So I wanted to read more comments. I mentioned Alexis. I got one more good one, and it looks like I may have to talk for a while. And I'm already actually pretty good for time here. So I'm not sure I'll get to more than this. But James P., great commenter. I'm not sure I'm going to read the whole thing, but essentially he is saying that I'm borrowing from other systems, like deontology, for example, when I'm giving some of my answers, when I'm justifying these things to Ryan, which... interesting. Maybe I am. Let's see. So he says, when we were talking about, optimum population stuff, when we were talking about that, I made the point that killing all these people would be bad. James is saying that getting there would be bad is borrowing from deontology, I think he says. I've lost the spot now. But he says, okay, killing... there it is very much... However, he says, getting there would be bad, quote-unquote, is very much a part of deontology. For example, the rule that says killing is never justified. Therefore, you are using deontology to argue for consequentialism. I don't know. I mean, I think it depends on what level of consequence you're looking at. I mean, I think it's unfair to say that I cannot count the consequences of murdering all these people. Like somehow I can't factor that in, that fact that that's going to happen. You're going to kill a bunch of people. I can't factor that in because later on there's going to be a certain, 10,000 people who are really happy. I don't know. I mean, I'm not convinced that I'm borrowing from deontology. That seems very much like consequences to me. But I don't know, James, I'm not sure you have a point and it's definitely worth thinking about. So I brought up earlier, I mean, I don't really know how exactly to factor in time and like, you know, that and quantifying is difficult. So like I said before, is it worth killing 10 people right now so that a bunch of people can be happy forever or something like that? Yeah, I think we run into problems. And so he wants to say, well, you need to use deontology when you say, the killing's never justified. Well, then we go the other way, as I brought up. What about when you need to kill one person to save every single human on Earth? Everyone will be dead unless you kill one person. Well, deontology says killing's never justified. So you wouldn't do it, but I would hope that you would just do it. I really would, rather than everybody in the entire earth just die. So clearly that's not, and I think it cheats a little bit to say, well, you know, deontology can use both consequentialism and, you know, that sort of cheats a little bit, I think, right? I mean, because why can't consequentialism be the system, but then you also have a few rules that help you to stick within the confines, you know, like stick within good consequences. Because I think if we're thinking more consequentially, if it was a rule, and this is why I think rule utilitarianism is good, and it's as Sam has also said, you need to make sure you're considering a wider view of consequences. If we live in a world where people think they can murder people because they might reach some better state of affairs later on, that's bad. I don't want to live in that world. It would be a bad world. That's a bad consequence. And I think you can shortcut and say, well, you can't use these people as means, yada, yada, yada. But I don't know. I mean, I think there are fewer problems with consequentialism than the other systems. To my mind, there seem to be fewer problems, and they both seem to be dependent somewhat on consequentialism, unless you want to say you can never treat a person as a means. I just don't know if you can live in that world. I mean, I don't know how you could ever do that. So it makes more sense to my mind that consequentialism is right, but that you can't always determine the consequences, or you need some rules to help you because we can't always determine these consequences. To me, that still seems to fit pretty easily with what Sam Harris has written. Maybe it doesn't fit with some sort of strict definition of consequentialism where you literally are not allowed to have a set of rules that might help you and be guidelines. Maybe not. So maybe in that way I'm wrong. But I don't think that goes against what Sam Harris is saying, because he would say, well, that's perfectly accounted for in well-being. I mean, you want to have a rule like that so that certain things don't happen, so that these bad consequences don't happen and people's well-being is such and such. So I don't know, James. I mean, let me know if you still disagree. It's a good point. I don't mean to say you're obviously wrong, and I'm not sure. You might be right. It's tough. You know, I still tend to think that consequentialism has more going for it. And so making a couple ad hoc adjustments to consequentialism makes more sense to me than the other way around, and making a ton of little adjustments to deontology, for example. So that's my view on that. Thanks, James P., for the comment. Thank you, everyone, for comments all the time. They're always very good. I rarely get bad comments. And I will look forward to next week. I'm not 100% on the schedule. I have stuff planned, but it's not done yet. So next week will be a surprise, but it should be a good surprise. So I got good stuff planned, but just in case, it's not 100%, and I may need to call an audible, so I don't want to announce anything yet. But I think you'll like it. And as usual, I need to thank my patrons. First, I'll say again, I just want to reiterate, I'm really loving this bonus content. It's going to be another good discussion this week. It's a great show. A dollar an episode. It's nothing. You only have to donate that much, and you get access to the Thursday episodes early. You get access to bonus discussions. Dollar an episode. It's nothing. Come on. So please check that out. It helps me out a lot. I really appreciate it. It's helping me build the show. And that's the best. And so now, having said that, I want to thank my patrons, as I've pledged to do. So let's see if we have some new ones. We have, Alexi became a patron. Thank you, Alexi. And Tim, a thoughtful dissenter, is sort of his handle there. Thank you so much, Tim. I really appreciate you coming on board. And sent me a message. Appreciate the message and all that. It's awesome. I love you guys. It's so great. I just want to build that. It's such a cool listener base I get to have with these. I don't know. It's great. But anyway, Jonathan Moyer, thank you. Havard, thank you. John P., thank you so much. Bangs Naughty Bits, thank you. Jeff Pearson, I don't know. That one time I said Greg, now I'm all paranoid. Thank you very much. Dale, thank you so much. Cincy Farmer, of course, thank you. Jeremy Sharp. Jim, we got Matt. And that rounds it out. Thank you so much, you guys, Matt Garrett, Jim. Thank you, everybody. I just appreciate it so much. I can't even explain it. It really is the best. So I hope you're getting everything out of the show that you are wanting for being a patron. And let me know if you ever have any suggestions or whatever. I just want it to be a good product for you guys. And thank you. So I will see you next week.